Osho, the Rebel. Responses to Disciples' Questions. Given at the Osho Commune International, Pune, India. Discourse number 17.
Beloved Bhagwan, what is a beautiful and enlightened chap like you doing with a motley crew such as we? Actually, I don't really want to know what you are doing. Just please don't stop doing it.
Manisha, every crowd is a motley crowd. But no individual is motley. Every individual is an authentic consciousness. The moment he becomes a part of the crowd, he loses his consciousness. Then he is dominated by the collective mechanical mind. And you are asking me what I am doing. I am doing a simple thing, bringing out individuals from the motley crowds. Giving them their individuality and dignity. I don't want any crowds in the world, whether they have gathered in the name of religion, or in the name of nationality, or in the name of race, it does not matter. The crowd as such is ugly. And the crowd has committed the greatest crimes in the world. Because the crowd has no consciousness. It is a collective unconsciousness. Consciousness makes one an individual, a solitary, pine tree dancing in the wind, a solitary, sunlit mountain peak. In its utter glory and beauty, a solitary line, and his tremendously beautiful roar that goes on echoing for miles in the valleys. The crowd is always of the sea. And all the efforts of the past have been to convert every individual into a wheel, into a cog in the wheel. Into a dead part in a dead crowd. The more unconscious he is, and the more his behavior is dominated by the collectivity, the less dangerous he is. In fact, he becomes almost harmless. He cannot destroy even his own slavery. On the contrary, he starts glorifying his own slavery, his religion, his nation, his race, his color. These are his slaveries, but he starts glorifying them. As an individual, he belongs to no crowd. Every child is born as an individual, and rarely a man dies as an individual. My work is that you should meet your death with the same innocence, with the same integrity, with the same individuality as you have met your birth. And between your birth and your death, your dance should remain a conscious, solitary, reaching to the stars, alone, uncompromising, a rebellious spirit. Because unless you have a rebellious spirit, you don't have a spirit at all. There are no other kinds of spirit available. And you rest assured that I am not going to stop it. That is my only joy, to make as many people free from the bondages, dark cells, their handcuffs, their chains, and to bring them into light so they can also know the beauties of this planet, the beauties of this sky, the beauties of existence. Other than that, there is no God and no God's temple. In freedom you can enter the temple. In a collectivity, in a crowd, you simply go on clinging to the corpses of the past. A man living according to the crowd has stopped living. He is simply following, like a robot. Perhaps robots are also a little bit more individual than the so-called individual in the crowd. Because just now in Japan, there are 100,000 robots, mechanical men, working in the factories. And suddenly, within these 2 months, a strange phenomenon is happening, and the government is worried, and the scientists are worried, and they have not been able to find any explanation. Up to now, the robots have been working silently. Nobody had ever thought that they will suddenly go into a rebellion. 10 persons have been killed within 2 months. A robot is working, and a robot works according to a computer, according to a pre-programmed plan. He cannot go in any way differently from the program that has been fed into it. But strangely enough, suddenly these 10 robots stopped working, got hold of some man who was around and just killed him. The figure of 10 men being killed is from the government. It cannot be true. No government speaks the truth. My own experience is that it is always good to multiply all the figures given by the government at least by 10. If they are saying 10 persons have died, 100 persons must have died or more. They are trying to pacify the masses, that don't be worried, we will find what got wrong. But they have no idea. In fact, any act that is not programmed in the computer, the robot is not capable of doing. And these were not the programs. They showed some sign of freedom. They showed some sign of individuality, some indication of rebellion. Computers cannot answer any new question. They can answer only questions for which information has already been given to them. Naturally, they don't have any intelligence. They have only a memory system, a filing system which records. Of course, they are perfect in their efficiency. No man can be that perfect. Once in a while you forget. And it is absolutely necessary for life to go on, to forget most of the unnecessary things that are happening every day. Otherwise, your memory system will be too loaded. But the computer is a mechanism. You cannot load it too much. It has no life. I have heard a man was asking a computer that, "Can you tell me where my father is?" He was just joking with the scientist who was working on that great computer, and the computer said, "Your father? He has gone fishing just 3 hours before." The man laughed and said to the scientist, "You are creating a stupid computer. My father is dead for 3 years." And he was shocked that the computer laughed, for which he was never programmed, and said, "Don't be gullible. It was not your father who died 3 years before. It was only the husband of your mother. Your father has gone for fishing 3 hours before. You can go to the beach and you will meet him." Right now this is only a story, but looking at the actual facts happening in Japan, the story takes a certain reality. But man in the crowd has always behaved blindly, and the same man you pull out of the crowd and ask him, "What were you doing?" And he will feel embarrassed. Can you do it alone on your own? And you will be surprised to hear his answer, that, "On my own I cannot do such a stupid thing. But when I am in a crowd, something strange happens. I have been living in a city for 20 years, which is proportionately divided half and half into Hindus and Mohammedans. So they are equally powerful. And almost every year riots happen. I used to know a professor in the university where I was teaching. I could have never dreamt that this man can put fire to a Hindu temple. He was such a gentleman, nice, well educated. Well cultured. And when there was a riot between the Hindus and the Mohammedans, I was watching, standing by the roadside, Mohammedans were burning a Hindu temple, Hindus were burning a Mohammedan mosque, and I saw this professor engaged in burning the Hindu temple. I pulled him out and I asked Professor Farid, "What are you doing?" He became very embarrassed. He says, "I'm sorry. I got lost in the crowd, because everybody else was doing it. I forgot my own responsibility. Everybody else was responsible. I felt for the first time a tremendous freedom from responsibility. Nobody can blame me. It was a Mohammedan crowd. I was just a part of it." On another occasion, a Mohammedan's watch shop was being looted. It was the most precious collection of watches. An old Hindu priest, because the people who was taking away those watches and destroying the shop, and they have killed the shop owner, were all Hindus. An old priest, I was acquainted with him. Was standing on the steps and shouting very angrily at the people, that, "What are you doing? It is against our religion, against our morality, against our culture. This is not right." And I was seeing the whole scene from a bookstore on a first story in a building just in front of the shop on the other side of the road. And the greatest surprise was yet to come. When people had taken every valuable article from the shop, there was only a old grandfather's clock, very big, very antique, and seeing that people are leaving, the old man took that clock on his soldiers. It was difficult for him to carry it, it was too heavy. I could not believe my eyes. He was preventing people. And this was the last item in the shop. I had to come down from the bookstore and he stopped the priest and asked him that, "This is strange. The whole time you were shouting that this is against our morality, against our religion, don't do it. And now you are taking the biggest clock in the shop . He said, I shouted enough, nobody listens. And then finally the idea arose in me that I am simply shouting and wasting my time and everybody is getting something. So it is better before somebody else gets this clock, because that was the only item left. I asked, but what happened about religion? Morality, culture. He said, with ashamed face, but he said it, that when nobody bothers about religion, culture and morality, why should only I be a victim? I am also part of the same crowd. I tried my best to convince them, but if nobody is going to follow the religious and the moral and the right way, then I am not going to be just a loser and looking stupid standing there. And nobody even listened to me. Nobody even took care of me. He carried that cloth . I have seen at least a dozen riots in that city, and I have asked individuals who was participating in arson, in murder, in rape, that can you do it alone on your own? And they all, without any exception, refused that on our own we cannot do it. It was because of so many people were doing, there was no responsibility left. We were not answerable. The crowd was answerable. Man loses his small consciousness so easily into the collective ocean of unconsciousness. That is the cause of all wars, all riots, all crusades, all murders. Individuals have committed very few crimes compared to the crowd. And the individuals who have committed crimes, their reason is totally different. They are born with a criminal mind. They are born with a criminal chemistry. They need treatment. But the man who commits a crime because he is part of a crowd has nothing to be treated. All that is needed is he should be taken out of the crowd. He should be clowned. He should be cleansed from all bondages, from any kind of collectivity. He should be made an individual again, as he had come into the world. The crowds must disappear from the world. Only individuals should be left alone. Then individuals can have meetings, individuals can have communions, individuals can have dialogue. Right now, being part of a crowd, they are not free, not even conscious to have a dialogue or a communion. My work is to take out individuals from any crowd, Christian, Hindu, Mohammedan, Jew, any political crowd, any racial crowd, any national crowd, Indian, Chinese, Japanese. I am against the crowd and absolutely for the individual, because only the individual can save the world. Only the individual can be the rebel and the new man, the foundation for the future humanity. The teacher is asking three boys in her class, "What was your mother doing when you left for his school this morning?" "Doing the washing," says Tom. "Cleaning the bedroom," says Dick. "Getting ready to go out and shoot ducks," says Harry. "What? What are you about, Harry?" asks the teacher. "Well, miss," says Harry, "my dad has left home and she threw her knickers on the fire and said she was going back to the game." People are imitators. People are not active on their own grounds. They are reacting. The husband has left her. That becomes a reaction in her. A revenge. She is going to the games. It is not an action out of consciousness. It is not an indication of individuality. This is how the collective mind functions. Always according to somebody else, either for or against, it does not matter. Either conformist or non-conformist, it does not matter. But it always is directed, motivated, dictated by others. He himself, left to himself, will find utterly lost what to do. I am teaching my people to be meditators, to be people who can enjoy aloneness, to be people who can respect themselves without belonging to any crowd, who are not going to sell their souls for any awards and honors and respectability and prestige that the society can give to them. Their honor and their prestige and their power is within their own being, in their freedom, in their silence, in their love, in their creative action, not in their reactions. What others do is not determinative of their life. Their life springs from within themselves. It has its own roots in the earth and its own branches in the sky. It has its own longings to reach to the stars. Only such a man has beauty, grace. Only such man has fulfilled the desire of existence to give him birth, to give him an opportunity. Those who remain part of crowds have missed the train.
Beloved Bhagwan, the other night during darshan, listening to your answer to Nivedano's question, I had tears running down my face. For the first time in the 7 years I've been with you now, I could not only intellectually understand, but really feel that to look inside oneself is the only way to find the real treasures of life. Even though I'm feeling this so strongly, it doesn't make it easier to meditate, to look inside. In the past, my favorite subject for you to talk about has always been love and relationships. Now, I can't get enough of hearing you talk about meditation. Beloved Bhagwan, could you please speak about Vipassana meditation?
Prem Sampurna. There are hundreds of methods of meditation, but perhaps Vipassana has a unique status. Just the same way as there have been thousands of mystics, but Gautam Buddha has a uniqueness of his own. In many ways he is incomparable. In many ways, he has done more for humanity than anybody else. In many ways, his search for truth was more sincere, more authentic than anybody else. Why I am reminded of Gautam Buddha? I am reminded of Gautam Buddha because you have asked a question about vipassana meditation. That is the meditation through which Gautam Buddha became enlightened. The very word vipassana in Pali, the language in which Gautam Buddha is spoke, he was perfectly acquainted with Sanskrit. Well educated as a prince in the highest literature of those days. But when he started speaking, he never used Sanskrit, because Sanskrit was the language of the intellectuals, of the Brahmins, of the priests, not of the people. It has never been a living language. It has a uniqueness in all the language of the world. It has been only spoken by the learned, by the scholarly amongst themselves. And because of its unknowability, the masses have been mystified by it. Translated, it contains nothing special. And sometimes it contains nothing but bullshit. But it has a very musical sound. Its construction is the most perfect than any language in the world. It is very exhaustive. 52 alphabets. English has only 26. It means other 26 sounds are unavailable in English. Sanskrit is twice rich because it can express all possible sounds. It has not left a single sound out of its alphabet. Subtle nuances have also been taken note of. Sounds which are very difficult to pronounce, sounds which are rarely used by anyone, but they are possible to be used, have been included. But Gautam Buddha decided to speak in the languages of the masses. It was a revolutionary step. Because the language of the masses are not grammatically right. Their words just by use by ordinary people change their tone, their sound, they become more easier. They are not complicated. We have seen this happen about English in India. The English was the language of the bureaucracy, of the people who were in power, of the British Empire. But few words are bound to enter into the local people's languages. And the transformation is worth seeing, which will explain to you the difference between the language which is really living alive, because raw people use it. It has the quality of a wild flower. The quality of a forest, not of a well-cut British garden. People have an uncanny sense of changing words into their simplest form. For example, the English word report. Even the far away villagers who don't come in contact with educated people have to use that word. Once in a while they have to go to the police station. But in the villages of India, the word report has become rapat. Report is a little difficult. Rapport is more alive. A station is a word that is bound to be used by the people of the lowest education or no education. In Punjab it has become cetacean. In other parts it has become tation. But it is nowhere station. Pali is a language of the simple, in a way innocent and ignorant. People, vipassana is their word. In Sanskrit, it has its parallel, of which the public has changed it according to their convenience. In Sanskrit, it is vipassayana. That is a little difficult. But in Pali it is simply vipassana. The meaning is the same. The meaning is, the literal meaning of the word is to look. And the metaphorical meaning is to watch, to witness. Gautam Buddha has chosen a meditation which can be called the essential meditation. All other meditations are different forms of witnessing. But witnessing is present in every kind of meditation as an essential part. It cannot be avoided. Buddha has deleted everything else and kept only the essential part, to witness. There are three steps of witnessing. Buddha is a very scientific thinker. He begins with the body, because that is the easiest to witness. It is easy to witness my hand moving, my hand being raised. I can witness myself walking on the road. I can witness each step as I walk. I can witness when I am eating my food. So the first step in vipassana is witnessing the actions of the body, which is the simplest. And any scientific method will always begin from the simplest. And while witnessing the body, you will be amazed with new experiences. When you move your hand with witnessing watchfulness, alertness, consciousness, there is a certain grace you will feel, and a certain silence inside the hand. You can do the movement without witnessing. It will be quicker. But it will lose the grace. The Buddha used to walk so slowly that many times he was asked why he is walking so slowly. And he has said that this is part of my meditation, always to bow as if you are walking in winter into a cold stream slowly. Alert, because the stream is very cold. Aware, because the current is very strong. Witnessing each of your steps, because you can slip on the stones in the stream. The method remains the same, only objects change with each step. The second step is the mind. Now you move in a little more subtler world. Watch your thoughts. And if you have been able and successful in watching your body, there is not going to be any difficulty. Thoughts are subtle waves, electronic waves, radio waves, but they are as material as your body. They are not visible, just like the air is not visible. But the air is as much material as the stone. So are your thoughts, material but invisible. That is the second step, the middle step. You are moving towards invisibility, but still it is material. Watch your thoughts. The only condition is, don't judge. Don't judge, because the moment you start judging, you will forget watching. There is no antagonism against judging. The reason why it is prohibited is that the moment you start judging that this is a good thought, that much space you were not witnessing. You started thinking. You became involved. You could not remain aloof and standing by the side of the road and just see the traffic. Don't become a participant either by appraising, valuing, condemning. No attitude should be taken about what is passing in your mind. You should watch them just as if clouds are passing in the sky. You don't make judgments about them that this black cloud is very evil. This white cloud looks like a sage. Clouds are clouds. They are neither evil nor good. So are thoughts. Just a small wavelength passing through your mind. Watch without any judgment. And you are again for a greater surprise as your watching will become settled. Thoughts will be coming less and less. The proportion is exactly the same. If you are 50% settled in your witnessing, then 50% of your thoughts will disappear. You are 60% settled in your witnessing, then only 40% thoughts will be there. When you are 99% pure a witness, there will be only once in a while a lonely thought, 1%. Passing on the road, otherwise the traffic is gone. That rush hour traffic is no more there. When you are 100% non-judgmental, just a witness, it means you have become just a mirror, because the mirror never makes any judgment. An ugly woman looks into it, the mirror has no judgment. A beautiful woman looks into it, the mirror makes no difference. Nobody looks into it, the mirror is as pure as when somebody is being reflected in it. Neither the reflection stirs it, nor no reflection. Witnessing becomes a mirror. This is a great achievement in meditation. You have moved half the way. And this was the hardest way, because now you know the secret, and the same secret has to be applied on different objects. From thoughts you have to move to more subtler experiences, emotions, feelings, moods, from mind to the heart. With the same condition, no judgment, just witnessing. And the surprise will be that the most of your emotions, feelings and moods which possess you when you are feeling sad, you become really sad. You are possessed by sadness. When you are feeling angry, it is not something partial. You become full of anger. Every fiber of your being is throbbing with anger, watching the heart, the experience will be that now nothing possesses you. Sadness comes and goes. You don't become sad. Happiness comes and goes. You don't become happy either. Whatever moves in the deep layers of your heart does not affect you at all. For the first time you taste something of mastery. You are no more a slave to be pushed and pulled this way and that way. Any emotion, any feeling, anybody can disturb you. For any trivia, in my village, in my childhood, I had a doctor, Dr. Hiralal Gotre. Nothing was wrong with the fellow. Only one thing, but it cannot be said to be wrong, just a little strange, that his wife was very tall and he was very small. The difference must have been at least 1 feet. The whole village laughed people enjoyed Dr. Gotre going with the wife and by chance he had a compounder who was far more beautiful than Dr. Gotre, younger, taller, looked more like a doctor, and Gotre looked like a compounder. As far as looks are concerned, I had an idea and it worked. I went to the compounder and said, Dr. Sahib, where is your compounder? The compounder said, what? And the doctor became very angry. That what do you mean by addressing my compounder as doctor and asking him about the compounder? I said, I can't do anything about it. The whole village thinks him to be the doctor. He looks to be the doctor. You must be kidding. He said, I'm being very serious. And if you don't listen, I'm going to come to meet your father. I said, you can come, but please bring the doctor also. Because then I can prove who is right. At that very moment, the wife came out, and the wife and husband may have quarreled for something. She supported me. She said, he is right. The compounder looks better than you. You are just a pygmy. I said, listen, you were coming to my father and the doctor's wife itself, he said, stop! This is going too far. She is my wife. I said, you cannot befool the whole world. Although the whole village was a little curious, but nobody has made it clearly, I spread the news around the village that we have been in a misunderstanding. The little man we used to think to be the doctor is not the doctor. He is the compounder. And the big man we used to think to be the compounder is the doctor. And the wife belongs to the doctor, not to the compounder. Whomsoever I said told me that solves the whole problem. How you got this? I said, I am coming directly from his dispensary. And from that day, it became so troublesome that everybody will come to his dispensary and ask the doctor, "Compounder Sahib, where is the doctor?" And slowly, slowly he started becoming very angry. He started keeping a stick by his side. He started running behind people, that, "Why you called me compounder?" They said, "This is a strange. You are compounder. The whole village knows it." And the compounder also enjoying the whole game. So he used to remain quiet. He will not say anything. And I found out a symbol, because to say anything was dangerous. He used to follow you with his stick. You have to run. Although I knew all the small streets of the town, I will give him a good run. And he will be shouting that, "I have to stop this. This boy is destroying my practice. The whole day, rather than doing the practice, I am just chasing people who are calling me compounder. And I have all the degrees of a doctor. And this boy is strange, that he has even convinced my wife that even she laughs at me and says, 'You are a compounder.' I created a small symbol rather than saying anything, but even that symbol used to work exactly. I will just keep 2 fingers up, 1 finger half, 1 full. And just passing on the street, not saying a single word. And the moment he will see 1 finger down, 1 finger up, he will rush out with his stick, that, 'I'm coming.' Then even the other people in the neighborhood started saying that, 'Mr. Compounder, this is too much. That boy has not said anything. He is passing the street innocently. And these are his fingers, whatever he wants to do. In whatever position he wants to keep, he can keep. It has no concern with you.' And he will say, 'It has concern with me. It is not only a question of his fingers. Why he should pass always with 1 finger high, another finger down, just in front of my door?' It became known to all the boys of the city. His house was just in the middle of the city. So almost half of the school boys, near about 500, used to pass in front of his house to the school. His school was on the other side. 500 boys with their fingers up and another finger down in a line, and he will become mad. But he could not do anything, and we reported to the police station that this man seems to be insane. He is a compounder, and he thinks that he is a doctor. And it is none of his concern in what position we keep our fingers. And the police inspector said, of course, it is nobody's concern. And I was suspecting that guy is a compounder. He looks like a compounder. The other person looks like a doctor, well-dressed, young, but his practice was finished completely. One day he called me, I was coming with my fingers up. He said, please come in. I said, such a great difference, compounder sahib. He somehow swallowed the anger, told me to sit on the chair. I said, this is great. What is the matter? He said, listen, I am a poor man, and you have destroyed my whole practice. Now no patient comes to me, and even if they come to the compounder. And it is so insulting that I cannot tolerate. I said, I have not done anything. You have destroyed your practice yourself by being involved in a trivia. You could have remained unruffled. One fact is true, that you are small. Perhaps you are the doctor. But if you had not created so much fuss, things would have cooled down. He said, now you have to do something. I said, it is now almost impossible to convince the whole village that really the compounder is the doctor. And to contradict myself, I cannot do that. People become disturbed with absolutely trivial, meaningless things. Somebody just passes by you, twitching his eye. He has not done anything, it is his eye. He has every right to twitch it. It is his constitutional right. No. Nobody can prevent anybody from twitching his eye, but why you get disturbed? And if he makes it a practice that whenever he sees you, he twitches his eye, you will start becoming enraged. Our consciousness is so small. It gets overpowered and possessed by anything, any mood, any feeling, any emotion. When you become a witness of the third step, you will become for the first time a master. Nothing disturbs you. Nothing overpowers you. Everything remains far away, deep below, and you are on a hilltop. These are the three steps of vipassana. Vipassana has many kinds of methods. This is only one method. Because Buddhism spread all over Eastern Asia, the Far East, Vipassana has a different structure in Japan. It is watching the belly as you breathe in and out. That's why the Japanese statues of Buddha have big bellies. No Indian statue of Buddha will have a big belly. That is unathletic. Does not look beautiful. But the Japanese Buddha has to have it. Because the whole method of vipassana is to practice the belly coming up, not the chest. Chest remains silent, unmoving, only the belly goes up as you breathe in, and belly goes in as you breathe out. Watching it, is a single step vipassana prevalent in Japan. Watching the same breathing but not at the belly point but at the nose point. When you breathe in, the air touches your nostrils, be aware of it. And when the heart air leaves out, be watchful. First step. And the second step, when you breathe in, there is a gap before the breath returns back. Just a rest period, few seconds. Watch those few seconds when the breath is not moving. If you become capable of watching those moments, you will be able to watch them outside also. When the breath goes out, before it goes in, there is a small interval, the same interval as inside. Watch that too. Just be aware of it. Two steps in Ceylon. In Tibet, they have a different way. In Korea, another way. In China, another way. But the essential point is to be a witness. And my feeling is that what I have described as three steps is the most easy, most simple. Everybody can do it. It needs no scholarship, no austerity, no great understanding, and after these three steps comes the real experience. These three steps take you to the door of the temple, which is open. When you have become perfectly watchful of your body, mind and heart, then you cannot do anything more. Then you have to wait. When the perfection will be complete on these three steps, the fourth step happens on its own accord as a reward. It is a quantum leap from the heart to the being, to the very center of your existence. You cannot do it. It happens, that you have to remember. Don't try to do it. Because if you try to do it, your failure is absolutely certain. It is a happening. You prepare three steps, the fourth step is a reward from existence itself. It is a quantum leap. Suddenly, your life force, your witnessing enters into the very center of your being. You have come home. You can call it self-realization, you can call it enlightenment, you can call it ultimate liberation. But there is nothing more than that. You have come to the very end in your search, and you have found the very truth of existence and the great ecstasy that it brings, as is said by and around itself. The Jew and the Irishman are arguing about sex. The Irishman says that according to his priest, sex is work and solely for the purpose of procreation. No, says the Jew. My rabbi says sex is pleasure. If it was work, we would let the Irish do it. meditation is not work. Meditation is purest blissfulness. As you go deeper, you come across more and more beautiful spaces, more and more luminous spots. They are your treasure. Deeper and deeper silences, which are not only absence of noise, but presence of a soundless sound, which are musical, alive and dancing. As you reach to the ultimate point of your being, the center of the cyclone, you have found God, not as a person, but as light, as consciousness, as truth, as beauty, as all that man has been dreaming for centuries. And those dreamt treasures are hidden within himself. And it is not a troublesome, torturous, ascetic practice. It is a very pleasant, musical, poetic, and it goes on becoming more and more of a sheer joy. It is not work, it is prayer. The only prayer I know of. Because to me, prayer means when you have achieved your being, you feel a tremendous gratitude towards existence. That gratitude is the only real, authentic prayer. All other prayers are fake, pseudo, man-manufactured. This gratitude will arise within you just like a fragrance arising out of roses. It is good that you are dropping your childish questions about boyfriend, girlfriend, your so-called relationship. You don't know yourself and you have started relating with others. It is good that you are asking about meditation. That will not only bring transformation to you, it will also bring transformation to your relationships. It will also bring an authentic overflow of love. And then only you will be able to compare that what you used to call love was not love, was simply lust, biological lust, based on your hormones. Only a meditator knows love that is not biological, that comes as a spiritual abundance with a great urge to share. Because the more you share it, the more you have it. A Jewish Swami takes a gorgeous ma out to dinner. They go to the most expensive restaurant in Pune. And feast on Italian spaghetti, Japanese sushi, and French wine. For dessert, they choose German chocolate cake and finish with Brazilian coffee. When the waiter brings them the bill, Goldstein finds he has left his wallet at home. So he takes out his picture of Bhagwan Sri Rajneesh and hands it to the waiter. "What is this?" demands the waiter. "My MasterCard," replies Deva Goldstein. The meditation is your MasterCard. Okay,
yes, Bhagwan.